Hello, and thanks for listening to the Ordinary Philosophy Podcast. Here, you can listen to interviews and audio renditions of pieces published at Ordinary Philosophy's website, dedicated to philosophy in the public square and the history of ideas that change the world. For more about Ordinary Philosophy, and to see the photographs and sources and inspiration for each piece, please visit ordinaryphilosophy.com. I'm Amy Cools, creator and editor of Ordinary Philosophy. Episode 80, Margaret Sanger, New York City Sites, Day 3, Part 1. Thursday, October 20th, 2016. I get out in decent time to start the day's explorations, just after 8, but it's not long before I realize I'm tired and, hence, a little cranky. My friends and I watched the third Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump debate last night, and some of the commentary which followed, then finally went to sleep very late after we talked about what we just watched, among other things. I'm mostly on New York time now, but not quite. The abortion issue came up almost immediately in the debate, since the first question from the moderator was about the Supreme Court and the appointment of justices. Trump pledged to nominate only strongly anti-abortion candidates. Clinton was adamant that Roe v. Wade and laws protecting women's access to birth control and abortion, with appropriate limitations, be upheld. Clinton also strongly endorsed Planned Parenthood, praising the services it provides and criticizing all efforts to defund it. I, for one, am grateful to Planned Parenthood, the organization that Margaret Sanger founded. Like the women Sanger made it her mission to help, I needed health care that I could not yet afford when I was still in my late teens and early 20s. I found it at Planned Parenthood. I'm grateful to the warm and caring providers there, and I simply did not find what many of the organization's opponents describe, a ruthlessly pro-abortion, anti-life organization. Instead, I met women who gave me wise and medically correct advice on all aspects of women's health, including ways to prevent the need for abortion. That's entirely in keeping with Sanger's mission. She was, in fact, anti-abortion, with certain qualifications. I plan to head all the way to White Plains today, but as I'm preparing to buy the ticket at Grand Central Station, I pause to reconsider my day's plans. In the end, I decide to put the trip on hold. It wouldn't put my funds and time to best use, since I was unable to discover the White Plains site location I sought at the New York Public Library yesterday. I'll see if I'm more successful when I do more research tonight and perhaps go tomorrow. Instead, I decide to cover the northernmost Manhattan sites on my list after I hit up a few near the southwest end of Central Park that I didn't get to yesterday. I walk north toward Central Park and then east, and stop first at 205 East 57th Street near 3rd Avenue, where the Bandbox Theater used to stand. Originally named Adolph Phillips 57th Street Theater, the theater that became the Bandbox was built in 1912, closed in 1926, and demolished in 1969. Now there's a Design Within Reach store and a high-rise apartment building here. On February 20th, 1916, Sanger and her supporters held a victory celebration at the Bandbox Theater. The court had just dismissed the obscenity charges against her for publishing The Woman Rebel that had caused her to flee to Europe the year before. While she was away, many papers had begun to discuss birth control and sex a little more openly, and as you may remember, her daughter had just died suddenly the previous November, soon after Sanger's return from Europe. Public opinion was swinging to Sanger's side, and the court no longer had the appetite to pursue a case against her. What had once seemed a public defense against immorality would more likely be perceived as an attack on free speech and emerging modern, scientific attitudes about human sexuality. Even without the court case, however, the arrest and indictments proved an enormous boost to Sanger's cause. she was portrayed, by herself as well as others, as a sort of free speech and humanitarian martyr, a persecuted champion of the cause of women, especially the poorest and most downtrodden. Then I head northwest to 14th East 60th Street between 5th and Madison Avenues. It's a 13-floor building erected in 1903. Two restaurants, Rotisserie Georgette and Avra Madison Estiatoro, occupy the ground floor, and there are apartments above. Sanger had been staying at the Ambassador Hotel, but moved to one of the apartments at this address on December 17, 1936. Her move here followed on the heels of the birth control movement's victory in the December 7th decision in the One Package case, and not long before Sanger attended the conference on contraceptive research and clinical practice that met at the Roosevelt Hotel, which, as you may remember, I visited on my first day following Sanger here in New York City. 1935 and 1936 were busy years for Sanger. In addition to the One Package trial, she toured India, speaking to women's groups and conferences and debating Gandhi there in December of 1935. She continued on to Hong Kong, then Japan. In Japan, she visited Tokyo's fledgling birth control clinic founded by her Japanese counterpart Shitsu Ishimoto, and reviewed birth control methods that had been developed in that country since her 1922 visit. While the birth control movement was also beleaguered in that country by law and custom, many Japanese healthcare professionals were working on new and effective methods of birth control in that island nation where population growth was a constant and pressing concern. In 1932, she had met a Japanese physician at a birth control conference who had developed a new type of diaphragm. He had sent her that package, which was intercepted in customs and led to the One Package case finally litigated 3 years later. She planned to continue her travels in China and Malaysia, but had to cut her trip short due to recurring gallbladder trouble, then a broken arm. She stopped for a short visit in Hawaii, then returned to mainland United States to rest and recuperate. I head west towards Central Park, then veer south towards its southeast corner to 768 Fifth Avenue at 59th Street. Three occasions bring me here to the Grand Plaza Hotel. On March 15, 1917, the National Birth Control League held a luncheon for her here in celebration of her release from Queens County Penitentiary. She had been in prison there for 30 days, convicted of violating anti-obscenity laws while operating her birth control clinic in Brownsville, Brooklyn. Then from November 11 to the 13th, 1921, the first American birth control conference, organized by Sanger, was held here. The conference was widely attended by medical professionals, social scientists, humanitarians, authors, suffragists, socialists, and socialites. Its list of sponsors was likewise distinguished, including famed parliamentarian and future Prime Minister Winston Churchill. Sanger gave the opening address, in which she called on the medical profession to join social workers and birth control activists in addressing the sexual dimensions of problems of hunger, poverty, and overpopulation. As she often pointed out, there were plenty of people working hard to alleviate poverty and disease, but there were very few paying attention to their primary root causes, the human need for love and sex. This was a conference which launched the future Planned Parenthood and concluded with a town hall event which turned into a police raid. Between the conference and the publicity following the raid, Sanger was firmly placed as the United States, and indeed the world's, preeminent birth control activist and spokesperson. Several years later, on February 26, 1929, Sanger presided over a dinner promoting the Birth Control Clinical Research Bureau. In her opening speech, Sanger outlined the history of her own birth control activism and the struggles and legal battles of the birth control movement in the United States from 1915 until that day. She also credited John Stuart Mill and Francis Place as founders of the modern birth control movement, about a century before her own activism began. Like Sanger, Mill was moved to support birth control by personal horror at the worst effects of children conceived in poverty. At age 17, he came across the corpse of a strangled infant discarded in a park. And like Sanger, Mill believed that when the poor had more children to help make money for the family, wages were inevitably driven down by the glut of laborers seeking employment, leading to a downward spiral of impoverishment and immiseration. So in 1823, young Mill and a friend distributed birth control pamphlets written by his father's friend and social reformer Francis Place, and were arrested and imprisoned for their trouble. I walk a little ways west along the southern end of Central Park to 36 Central Park South, also known as 59th Street. Here at the Park Lane Hotel, Sanger delivered her speech, My Way to Peace, to the New History Society on January 17, 1932. In my view, it's a nasty speech. While Sanger generally insisted that birth control be entirely voluntary, the result of education and the right of women to have control over their own bodies, in this speech, she called for coercive sterilization of the, quote, unfit. As Nazism was developed and implemented in the years to come, Sanger opposed it staunchly, sharply criticizing its racial doctrines and opposing its coercive practices. Though she justified it on the grounds of improving public health and decreasing mortality rates, to my mind, she was never able to sufficiently explain how her earlier call in My Way to Peace for coercive sterilization of mental defectives, people with certain diseases, and convicted criminals was morally superior to Hitler's fascist system when it came to these unfortunate and marginalized groups. One place I miss on this trip is the former site of the nearby Park Theater, near the southwest corner of Central Park, where Harold Cox delivered the Sanger speech he was prevented from making at the town hall 5 days earlier. A New York Tribune announcement describes the location as Columbus Circle near 59th and Broadway. As I consult the 1923 Bromley Atlas I've been consulting for much of this series, I don't find the Park Theater. Later, though, I searched through an earlier edition of the Bromley Atlas, and this time I'm in luck. The Park Theater, renamed the Cosmopolitan Theater by 1923, was on 58th Street, the second address to the west of 8th Avenue, its northeast corner at Columbus Circle at the southwest edge of Central Park. It stood where the Time Warner Center now faces onto 58th Street, about where Google Maps identifies 322 West 58th. In 1944, Sanger reminisced, "Birth control, 15 or 20 years ago, was a lurid and sensational topic. The very term was one not mentioned in polite society, thanks to Anthony Comstock, who had Congress classify it with obscene and filthy literature. Our struggles lacked the dignity they have today." Back in 1921, Harold Cox, brilliant member of the English Parliament and editor of the Edinburgh Review, was to speak with me at that early forum of free speech, Town Hall. Our subject was, birth control, is it moral? With astonishing directness, Roman Catholic Archbishop Patrick J. Hayes, through his emissary, Monsignor Joseph P. Deanan, closed the meeting before it even opened. We had grown accustomed to opposition, from the combination of the Comstock group with the Roman Catholic hierarchy, but never had the interference been so brutally direct before. Time and again, theaters, ballrooms where I was to speak, were ordered closed before the meeting could be held. In city after city, this occurred during the years 1916, 17, and 18, but the climax was the now famous Town Hall incident, which raised the issue throughout the country. Can one in public office use the power of that office to further his personal religious beliefs? Mr. Cox and I were met at the steps of the town hall that evening by policemen, barred from entering and told, "There ain't going to be no meeting, that's all I know." We had the hierarchy to thank for so publicizing our meeting that the second held shortly after, at the Big Park Theater in Columbus Circle, was packed 15 minutes after a single door was opened. 2,000 people, many of whom had never heard of birth control before Cardinal Hayes gave it a nationwide publicity, stood outside clamoring to get in. I descend into the subway station at Columbus Circle and take the A train north, almost to the top of Manhattan Island. There are many sites on my list from Inglewood all the way back down to the southern end of Central Park, so I decide to visit them from north to south. To be continued. Ordinary Philosophy's website and podcast are independent and ad-free, and depend on support from patrons and listeners like you. To find out more about how you can contribute to Ordinary Philosophy, please visit the subscribe, submit, and support page today. And if you enjoy what you read and hear at Ordinary Philosophy, please share with those you believe will enjoy it too, and take a moment to rate and review this podcast on iTunes. And thank you very much, as always, for listening.